Well, Dell's introduction this morning was appropriate to the subject for today. The idea that we can attain godhood through our own personal efforts, which is the belief system of many people, it happens to be the underlying theme for what I want to talk about today. But anyway, I want to cover a rarely used book as far as being the topic of a message, because so many people don't understand it. It addresses a very important consideration in life, but it doesn't really provide the answer that we as physical human beings would want it to. But my point is that the book of Job is incredibly significant in the things that it addresses. Part of why we have a problem with the book is that we don't understand its setting. I'm firmly convinced that the book of Job is probably the oldest book in the Bible. Oldest by far. It was Ezra, after the time of the captivity of the southern kingdom, who compiled the Old Testament somewhat in the form that we know of it today. But that was long after the fact. But he decided that the book of Job was very important. And in fact, it is. When you think about it, the book of Job is the first and perhaps the only Old Testament book that focuses on practical Christian life matters. When you think about it, Genesis is primarily history. Now, granted, there are spiritual lessons that we can draw from any one of these, but Exodus is largely history, with an introduction to law. Leviticus, obviously, is history and a greater focus on law. Numbers, similar story. And Deuteronomy, a repeat of the law. These first five books of the Bible don't do what the book of Job does. But there's something else to think about. It's only the first 11 chapters of Genesis that precede the writing of the book of Job. Think about what did people have back in that day, prior to the time of Moses, which was a span of 2,500 years. It was 2,500 years from creation to the giving of the law on Mount Sinai. What did people have for scriptures before Moses? They basically didn't have anything except, very likely, the book of Job. The book of Job was written during the time of the patriarchs. Job lived in that period of time between the Tower of Babel and the birth of Abraham. He lived for approximately 200, perhaps longer, but about 200 years. And the longevity places him in that period of time between the flood and the birth of Abraham. Longevity was about 200 years prior to that. Abraham himself lived for 175. Job was very likely a contemporary of or a predecessor of Abraham. But we know very little about the setting. You know, when it comes to the New Testament, all of those books, we understand who the author was. We understand the world conditions that they lived in at the time. We understand the locale. But in the book of Job, for the most part, we don't consider those things. And it's when we understand the setting, the time frame, and the issues of the day and who the players were, that we can better understand why the book of Job is significant. It's actually a very remarkable book. Ancient Job was a remarkable man. And there's many things in the text that tell us something about his character and his history and his talents. Job was a brilliant scientist. He was an engineer, a geologist, an agriculturalist, a mathematician, and an architect. In some of the exchanges between him and God, we can see that he's citing some of his personal accomplishments. Of course, in comparison to what God has done, it's nothing. But he is setting out his history. He's setting out his record of accomplishments in life, which tell us these things. There are people who suggest that perhaps Job was the builder of the Great Pyramid. Maybe he was, maybe he wasn't. But it's interesting, there was a man who is credited with being the builder, the architect and the builder of the pyramid. And in our language, it looks like his name is Cheops, Cheops. Well, if you pronounce it a little differently, it could be Cheops. They didn't have the letter J in the Hebrew language back then. So it could very well be that he was. Perhaps he was, perhaps he wasn't. I'm not just saying, but there's those who speculate that perhaps he was involved. And there are considerations in the text in the book of Job that kind of suggest that perhaps he had built something of that nature. But he was at least a mathematician. And you have to wonder if perhaps his name and his reputation wasn't the source of the name of the Wizard of Oz. A wizard is a mathematician, somebody who's, you know, we use the term in modern slang of a whiz kid. Well, that's somebody who's really intelligent and who's really accomplished in science and math and that sort of thing. Could be that he was the original. It's hard to say. But where did Job live? That's something we don't know, and we can... There's a passage in Lamentations 4:21 that shows that Edom dwells in the land of Uz, which is south of what is present-day Jordan, the southern region of which would have been Edom in ancient times, and it's also just north of the land of Midian, where Moses lived for some time. Moses was in the land of Midian many, many years later. They certainly weren't anywhere near contemporary. They couldn't have been. But in Job 1, verse 1, we read this. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. And there was born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. But at this point in time in his life, he must have been some 40 to 60 years old. It doesn't say anything about grandchildren, but his children must have been adults by this time, and we can gather that from the rest of the context that we read about them. But Job lived in this region here, and some say the word Uz might have meant east. Well, east of what? East of where the pyramids were, east of Egypt. It's south of the land of Israel, but of course there was no Israel that early on. But Job was a faithful husband, a father, and a patriarch. He lived between the time of the Tower of Babel and the calling of Abraham, somewhere within that time frame. For people to have been dispersed down into these remote regions by this time tells us that it was after the dispersion, introduction of languages that God imposed upon them while they were building the tower, causing people to migrate out into different parts of the earth. So it would have to be a good century or so, maybe more, after the Tower of Babel. But that tells us something, that Job lived during the lifetime of Shem. Shem lived up until Abraham was about 150 years old. Shem knew of all of the patriarchs back three or four generations prior to the flood. He lived 100 years before the flood. So a great deal of knowledge would have come forward through Noah and through Shem. And that would explain how Job understood many spiritual principles. And we can find them in the book, one being the resurrection. Job understood the resurrection. Thing that people today don't fully understand. Job very likely lived from 2 to 3 centuries after the flood. It was about 350 years from the flood to the birth of Abraham, so somewhere within that time frame, and probably the latter part of it. If so, he lived within the lifetime of or within recent memory of Nimrod. This is some of his background. This is some of the things that he gained knowledge of, reflected into his character and his choice to be a righteous man. The problem is, he attained his righteous state basically through his own efforts. And that somewhat reflects what Dell was talking about earlier. Job was a righteous man. There wasn't a lot to fault him about in his life. But there was an area that he didn't really understand. He didn't know God in truth. He didn't really understand his Creator. His whole focus was on his personal efforts towards achieving a righteous state. Let's also understand something. Job didn't have any scriptures, nor did he have the Holy Spirit, which is kind of profound when you think about it. He had no scriptures to go by. What he would have had, if anything, was the oral tradition, and very likely the oral tradition that was passed through Noah, Shem, and so on, through to his day. So what they understood about God, what they understood about righteousness, was largely through that means. He had no scriptures. For that matter, neither did anyone who lived prior to the time, prior to the Exodus, prior to the time of Moses. They didn't have any scriptures. The only thing they might have had was a historical record, and if they did have scriptures, it was largely unknown to us. So think of what it would be like to live in a world, to try to uphold the standards of righteousness, to try and live a righteous life without any Bible at all. How would we do that if it were our lot in life? Job was, certainly, by all standards, a righteous man. He officiated as the patriarch of his family. He sacrificed on behalf of himself and his immediate family, and who knows who else. He might have been a greater man than just the patriarch of his own family. It would seem that by his friends, so-called, who came to him when he was in his state of affliction, Job lacked something, and he didn't realize it. But the afflictions that came on Job were not a direct result of anything that he did himself. And that's something else we need to realize. There was another play, another interaction going on in his regard that he was completely unaware of. Because, you see, Satan was going about throughout the earth, and in one of his annual visits before God's throne, he brought up the man Job. And Satan said, "Look how righteous this man is. Oh yeah, he's such a righteous man. Yeah, right. Only because of his massive blessings." Job was an extremely wealthy man. Satan said, "Well, he's only faithful to you. He only obeys you. He's only a righteous man because of what he gets out of it. Take those blessings away, and he's going to curse you." That was the real underlying motivation for what's going on here. You see, Job knew nothing of that. We know about it because we can read of it in the first couple of chapters. But he didn't know that at all. So his questions and the things that he wanted to know, why do the righteous suffer? That's the basic question posed in the book of Job. Why do the righteous suffer? Because you see, there was a prevailing thought in the world of that day. Big surprise. We still think that way today, but to some degree. That the righteous will be blessed and the wicked will be cursed. Isn't that logical? But then in real life, it doesn't happen that way. And that was Job's question. Why do the righteous suffer? Shouldn't be, logically, humanly, logically. The righteous should be blessed. It was a great problem to understand such a thing. How that someone like Job could be so horribly afflicted. Within a matter of hours or just a few days, he lost his family. He lost all of his servants. He lost all of his cattle, which represent his wealth. And he even lost his own physical health. Why? He continually wanted to know why. And he never got the answer that he was seeking. There is an answer there, but it's something a little more profound than we might think. Even his own wife reflected somewhat the thinking of Satan. Curse God and die. Put an end to this misery. Didn't happen. He held on to his integrity. Now, here's another important thing that we can draw from the book. No matter what his physical state, he never let go of his integrity. What would we do in a similar circumstance? Many of us have been tried in ways that, experiencing serious calamities in our lives or serious health issues. What would we do if we were in a similar circumstance as Job was put through? Would we react the same way? Would our faith be eroded or would it be strengthened? And that's another underlying theme in this book. Many things are very subtle, but there's some fantastic spiritual lessons. But we have to read with understanding. We have to know the circumstance, the setting, the point of all of this to be able to draw those out. Now, there's another theory I have on the book of Job. And consider, it was the only scriptures they had clear up until the time of Moses. For the first 2,500 years, there was no Bible as we know it. There was word of mouth. There were perhaps writings. They were never preserved. But the book of Job was. The most ancient book in the Bible was preserved. And perhaps the least understood. But people back in the time before Moses would have looked to the book of Job because they, I'm sure, had all of the same problems in their lives. Health issues or whatever. Financial issues. They wanted to know the same questions, as we do today. Why do the righteous suffer? How would you answer that? Why is it? We have health issues, financial issues, family issues, accidents, things that throw our lives into turmoil. Why does it happen? Do we have an answer? Or do we have the same answer that Job had? Job got to know God better through the experiences that he had. But it's very profound to realize that there is something going on behind the scenes all the time. Our physical circumstances aren't all of it. There's a greater purpose. We know in the book of Daniel, where it says that many of them of understanding in the end time will fall. They're going to be tried. They're going to be tested. Not because of their sins, but to make them stronger. That's what was happening here. Job, yes, undoubtedly was a righteous man, and perhaps he would outshine most of us. But it was that largely on the basis of his own personal effort. Job didn't have God's Spirit. Job didn't really understand the God he was worshiping. He thought of God as another man. And you can see it in the dialogue between himself and the others, where he addressed God like he was another man, like God's judgment or like God's motives were what a man's motives would have been. He thought to correct God. He held himself up as the standard that God should be responding to, not realizing that God's wisdom, God's purpose, was so far beyond anything that he could have seen at that time in his circumstance. God allowed Satan to basically devastate the man. He was down to where he was barely alive much of the time. He had lost everything. He had lost even the support. Well, he didn't have his family, but he certainly lost the support of his own wife. And his friends came in, and he spent a great deal of time in back and forth conversation with these men of learning. These were leaders in their own right. These were knowledgeable people. They understood the principles of righteousness. At least it would seem that from what they said. But Job had to justify himself before these people all the time. They were relentless. They pounded on him and pounded on him. You must be doing something wrong. That's why this has all happened to you. Not knowing why. All the time. Job didn't really know why. Why is this happening to me? His friends were all cause and effect type people. And I'm sure we've met them in our own lives. Cause and effect. Obey God, you will be blessed. Disobey God, and you will suffer the consequences. But we look around and we see wicked people who have no regard for God at all, who don't keep any of God's laws, doing just fine. Why? Why is it that way? That's the basic question. And it's a question that has extended all through time. These men, supposedly Job's friends, talked through a number of issues regarding what they thought about what we would call spiritual matters. They thought they knew. Job thought he knew. Job thought he could fault God because God wasn't operating towards him the way he thought he should. And God remained silent. Each of the men stated their case, and Job had to defend himself. He had to justify himself because he could think of nothing that would warrant what happened to him. And in that sense, I suppose he was right. It wasn't about his actions. He didn't do anything. He didn't sin in such a way that would warrant this occurring to him. So why? Why do the righteous suffer? That was the basic question. What answer did he get? Silence, basically. That question wasn't answered directly, and it remains an answer with all people of all time. Because it happens. We're physical. Our lives are meant to be temporary. Some are blessed more than others. Sometimes the less righteous are blessed more than the more righteous. How do you account for that? That's the question. The book of Job addresses that, but it gives a perspective that most of us would not otherwise gain. Job, in a sense, thought of himself more righteous than God. You can read that in chapter 35, verse 2. Job had the audacity to set God straight in certain matters. God wasn't doing his job properly, he thought. Well, finally, God dealt with Job and answered some of his accusations from a whirlwind. The message in Job is certainly applicable to any age. There's another aspect of the book of Job that I think we should consider, the possibility that Job addresses itself to the basic thinking of the Jewish religion. Because, you see, they are in a similar circumstance. They have the law, they have the definition of righteousness as they understand it. A righteousness that's produced by law-keeping. A righteousness that is basically the result of their own personal efforts. Without the Spirit of God, necessarily. Without a Messiah. But it was a very similar thing to where Job was in his circumstance. Is the book of Job a message also to those people who are of Jewish orientation? I throw that out as a possibility and something we can ponder in time as we get into this a little further. The Old Testament law, or the Old Testament religion, the Jewish religion as it came to be, is largely a religion of works. They establish their righteousness by their own works. They worship God, but they don't really understand God. Otherwise, they wouldn't have rejected their Messiah. Can you see a parallel, possibly, between the book of Job and the mental orientation or the spiritual orientation of the people who worship under that kind of a worship system? I throw that out just as a possibility. It's clear that the New Testament writers also understood the book of Job. It's referred to in a number of places. Ezekiel, later, much later, hundreds of years later, referred to the book of Job, Ezekiel 14:14, where it says, Though these three men, Noah, Daniel, and Job, were in it, they should deliver but their own souls by their righteousness, says the Lord God. Job accepted his situation with resolve. James 5:7-11 makes reference to passages in the book of Job. James 5:7. Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waits for the precious fruit of the earth and has long patience for it until he receives the early and the latter rains. But you also, patient, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draws nigh. Grudge not one against another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge stands before the door. Take, my brethren, the prophets who have spoken in the name of the Lord for an example of suffering, affliction, and of patience. Behold, we count them happy which endure. You have heard of the patience of Job and have seen the end of the Lord, that the Lord is very pitiful and of tender mercy. That wasn't Job's first impression through what was happening to him. But James recognized the validity of the book of Job and the reality of Job as a person. It tells us that the New Testament writers recognized the book and they recognized its significance. Now, for that matter, the New Testament church didn't have the full New Testament either at first. It was a full generation later before the Gospels were written and circulated. What did they look to? For spiritual matters. It wasn't the history so much. It wasn't the law so much. The law provided a standard by which to live. But the Old Testament didn't really discuss personal concerns in the way that the book of Job does. That's the important thing to realize. They also looked to the book of Job for the important message that it contains. And its message is very important. Let's look at Job 19, verse 25 to 27. Job 19. And this tells us something about Job's awareness of God's overall plan. He says, "For I know that my Redeemer liveth, and that he shall stand at the latter day upon the earth. And though after my skin worms destroy this body, yet in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold, and not another, though my reins be consumed within me." Job understood the millennial kingdom. He understood the resurrection. This far back in time, he understood. How did he come to understand that? Obviously, through the oral tradition, so far as we know. Some of the lessons that we can gain from the book of Job are that there are matters going on in heaven with God that believers know nothing about. Things yet which affect their lives. There's things going on in the background, many times, that we don't realize. And they're part of the question why. Job didn't know what was going on in the background between God, himself, and with Satan. Satan had offered a premise to God, and this was an opportunity for God to prove Satan wrong. Satan had just deceived a third of the angels. He was riding high. He thought it was a simple matter to take away a man's blessings, and he'll curse God. It's not rare. Some do. But the thing is, the question is, how devoted are we to God's way of life? And does our physical circumstance support that? Or do we hold to that persuasion no matter what our physical circumstance? Every one of us, as we get older, are going to realize that our physical bodies are going to betray us. Things are not going to not work the way they used to. We're going to lose our health. Every human being at some point in time, perhaps except those who die healthy in bed and never wake up or something, but most of us are going to have to suffer through something. The question is, how does that affect our devotion? How does that affect our character? How does that affect our dedication to God's ways? Is it dependent on our blessings? Or is it the same irrespective of our blessings? This is the important thing that we need to be asking ourselves. And the book of Job explains a great deal of that. A second thing we can gather from the book of Job is that even the best efforts at explaining the issues of life can miss the point. God's people do suffer. Bad things happen at times to good people. So we can't judge a person's spirituality by his circumstances or successes. Another thing, even though God seems far away, perseverance in faith is a most noble virtue, since God is good and one can safely leave his life in his hands. Another point, the believer in the midst of suffering should not abandon God, but draw near to him, so out of the fellowship can come the comfort without necessarily the explanation that we would like. Final point, suffering may be intense, but it will ultimately end for the righteous, and God will bless abundantly. And that's what happened in Job's case. He endured what we might regard the unendurable, but God blessed him greatly in the end. Job's personal commitment was his primary religious orientation. Job saw himself and he saw his life, and he regarded his righteousness through his own personal situation, not realizing that there is a power, that there is a plan, that there are things going on in the universe, that there is an overall master plan into which each one of us will, to some degree, play a part. It's that greater picture that we need to consider. This is primarily where Job lacked a full understanding, and he's certainly not alone. We can be like that as well. Another interesting possibility to consider is how the book of Job describes what we might call the Laodicean condition. Job was certainly one of those men who had everything, had need of nothing. We have people today who are like that. They feel that their spiritual level of attainment is as great as it can be. Maybe, maybe not. But the point is, what is the source of that? What is the source of our attainment to a righteous state of being? Is it our own effort? To some degree, we should say, yes, it should be. It's got to be. We have to put effort into it, yes. But how far can we go with just our own personal integrity to achieve the righteousness of God? We have to go on through the power of His Spirit to take on the qualities of character, to take on His mind and His thoughts, to attain an acceptable level. There's a difference, and maybe it's that same difference that I pointed out as it regards the Jewish religion. God's Spirit has got to be a component in our achievement of a righteous state. God said to the Jews in his day that unless your righteousness exceed that of the scribes and Pharisees, you'll have no part in the kingdom. To be a part in God's kingdom, his family, his coming world, we have got to exceed their righteousness. And looking at them, at certain people, from a physical standpoint, we may be intimidated by their degree of devotion and their apparent righteousness. But there's something more, and that's also an underlying message of the book of Job. There's many places where the New Testament writers reflected upon the issues in Job. There's some places in the New Testament that are direct quotes of the book of Job. Here it is. Romans 11:35. And this tells us that Paul was certainly reading the book of Job. Romans 11:35. Or who has first given to him, and it shall be recompensed unto him again. For of him, and through him, and to him are all things, to whom be glory forever and ever. Amen. I don't see it in the footnotes here, but that passage quotes Job 41:11. Over in 1 Corinthians 3:19. 1 Corinthians 3:19. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God, for it is written, he has taken the wise in their own craftiness. That passage quotes Job 5:13. There are many places. They wouldn't necessarily be obvious to us, but there's many places where the New Testament writers reflected on the lessons that they gained from the book of Job. So it's not a book that we ought to disregard or lay aside and not use simply because we don't fully understand what it's leading to. The book of Job is important. It was important in ancient times. It was the one book that addressed the basic questions of life in more profound ways than any other Old Testament passage did. And for that matter, it's as modern as it can be because it addresses the questions we have in this life. Why do the righteous suffer? Logically, to our own minds, that shouldn't be happening. But it does. And what's the answer? Well, what was the answer that Job got? Job didn't get an answer to that question. He never really knew why he suffered. What was happening in another realm entirely. Satan was rebuked. Satan was proved wrong. Satan was shown that those people who truly rely on God, whose strength is in God, who have his Spirit, can't be overthrown. Because it wasn't based on the blessings that they get. It was based on their love for God. The question is, how would we respond in a similar circumstance? Let's consider those people who walked out of the church in the last couple of decades, thinking that they had been misled. They had been deceived. Things weren't the way they thought it was. We used to use that old word, disillusioned. They became disillusioned. Well, it's because they had illusions. You can't become disillusioned if you don't have an illusion in the first place. They didn't really understand what was going on. How hard is it for those kind of people to come back? See, in cases like that, Satan has a very strong position. But it doesn't have to be. And that's where we need to be perceptive and realize that things going on in the world, things going on in our personal lives, things that affect our personal circumstances, should not diminish our love and our devotion to God. That's got to be the underlying message of the book of Job. Satan cannot get to those people who are properly oriented, who understand God, who have His Spirit. So with that brief introduction, we can get into the text of the book and look at some of its principles. But of course, that's going to have to be for another day. That'll be part two. But I want to give each of us an assignment sometime in the next 3 or 4 weeks. Read through the book of Job. It's not that long. It can be done in 2 or 3 sittings. But look through the book of Job and try and get the picture. And then another time, we'll go through the book point by point and draw out some of the things that are there. And we can see why the book of Job is so important, that even from the most ancient times, these principles were laid out for us to consider, that there is a purpose. God has a purpose. We don't always know what it is. And we can't always answer why. He knows why. We'll understand why someday. But day to day, we don't always understand. But we will. So, before next time, if you get a chance, by all means, read through the book of Job and try and get the picture. And next time, we're going to go through it in detail and try and gain from it what it teaches.